This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. The car service app Uber faced a bumpy road after it set up shop in Boston late last year. After a few months of business, the state issued Uber a cease and desist order. The governor ultimately reversed the ban on Uber car service, but it wasn't the first time Uber faced trouble entering a new market. Uber has faced barriers in New York, Chicago, and other cities. And today we've been talking about what states can do to cultivate innovation. So it's a perfect opportunity to talk to Michael Powell, the general manager of Uber, to weigh in on this. Michael Powell, thank you for joining us.
Callie, thanks for having me.
Of course. So everybody wants to know, did you take an Uber car over here?
I did.
You did?
You caught me. I heard you might have tried to sign up this morning.
I did. I'm going to get to my problems in a minute.
Okay.
I think it's important for people to know how this works. Simply, it's, you explain it.
Sure. Let me start with my first experience, right? I joined Uber about 15 months ago, and I used it for the first time in San Francisco. Like many people, I needed a ride. And in San Francisco, sometimes you get stranded given the transportation options. And so I heard about Uber from a friend, downloaded the app, put my credit card on file, and signed up. And I hit a button, not knowing what to expect. A few minutes later, my first ride was a BMW 7 Series. I think I got an upgrade. I was expecting a town car or something like that. But the 7 Series popped up. I got in, direct the 7 Series to drive me a few miles. I got out. I got a receipt in my inbox, and I was happily on my way. And so it was a seamless experience my first time, and really, for many people, it's really as simple as that. It's a magic button that you hit. A car shows up, you get in, you get out, and you know what your charge at the end.
All right. So we can say that knowing what your charge at the end is a fabulous efficiency. But how is that different from calling a cab or a car service?
Sure. So a few innovations that Uber offers, right? One is the presence of real-time dispatch and real-time data. So, for example, many people, when they first open it, they're surprised to see, there's cars. I can see cars on these maps. Very strange. And there's comfort in knowing what's available around you real time.
So in the past where you call and say, I need a cab in how long? And they say, oh, 10 minutes and, you know, it's 20 or then whatever. So that's not the case here.
Absolutely. Yeah. We hear the frustration sometimes where you call, say you have a very important meeting to get to or you have to get to work in the morning. And you call and they say, we will be there. 5 a.m. we will be there. Lo and behold, maybe at 5 a.m., you're not sure if they're there, right? There's a little bit of uncertainty. And so in the Uber app, when you request, a few minutes later, you can see the car on its way, you can see when it arrives, and you do have the contact information for the driver in case you do need to reach out to them and communicate in real time.
We should also mention, because one of the first things that came to my mind when I heard about it without having gone through some part of the process was I'm thinking, how do I know that the person in this car is connected with Uber? So as a woman traveling, as a safety perspective, one of the things that was interesting is that you see the picture of the driver.
That's a very good point on the safety issue, right? Uber partners on the black car side with licensed livery companies. On the taxi side, specifically, let's talk to Boston. We partner with licensed City of Boston Hackney drivers. So you can have the confidence when you do book that the person on the other side is licensed. They're not some crazy nutso that just hopped in a car.
Right.
And then there's a second layer of security that you mentioned where in real time that information is presented and recorded. And you can see it on your end with the photo. And then even at the end, let's take the driver's example. You know, drivers also feel unsafe sometimes. They're concerned that who's in their back seat? Is the person going to pay their fare? And at the end, you know, we do have the credit card on file. So in case the person decides, hey, maybe I want to get out of the car and start running, the driver doesn't really have to worry about chasing that person down.
Right. I'm talking with Michael Powell. He's the general manager of Uber Boston, and it's a car service connected to an app. It's very innovative in its approach about transportation. And some of the ways that Uber works, it's the reason why different cities, including Boston, have been uncomfortable. I think it violates or gets around some of the transportation regulations and the way that it works. Can you speak about the cease and desist order that was put on the company earlier and present your side of the case about why it doesn't violate transportation regulations that the city officials are concerned about.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. Why don't I start a little bit more broadly, and then if you want to talk specifically on Boston, feel free to probe. So in any city before we launch, we get very, very excited. Launch is a big deal at Uber, and we want to make sure we do our homework to allow clients and drivers that we partner with to have the confidence that they're going to have a legal, you know, fully efficient, reliable ride, and we owe it to them. And so before we enter any city, we look at what's the ordinances that are on the books. We talk to drivers and partners to understand, hey, can we do business here, and can we offer our service? Usually the answer is yes. Otherwise, you know, Uber only operates in markets where we are legal. That being said, we're playing in an industry that is regulated with very powerful incumbents. I think you spoke to someone earlier that talked about the value of a New York taxi medallion.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, these incumbents, or to protect their business, will ask regulators, say, hey, you know, what can you do for me? Or there's elements of protectionism at play. And what our job is in those cases is to maintain a dialogue with local officials, with regulators, to educate them about Uber. When they wrote the laws, they did not write the laws with this crazy mobile app called Uber in mind. They wrote the laws, you know, I've seen them from 30 to 40 years ago, where they look like they were typed out on a typewriter. And so it's our job to work with them to try to modernize any regulations that are on the books. And usually when we sit down and have a conversation, now you can see what happened. I don't know if you heard about what happened in D.C. this week.
No.
That was a big win in terms of some model legislation regarding Uber that was passed by the city council in D.C. to show what really can happen when we sit down and have a great conversation with the local government.
So the D.C. city government said, fine, you all are okay and you're not violating regulations. Is that the essence of it?
That is the essence of it. But the interesting part is, 1 year ago, the D.C. government, the taxi commission, was threatening to take away licenses for the drivers, to fine Uber. And if you fast forward 1 year, it's amazing what happened this week in terms of the model legislation to create a new class of for-hire vehicle that can be dispatched based on time and distance, and to really pave the way for technologies like Uber to offer great, efficient, reliable service in a city like D.C.
I'm talking with General Manager of Uber Boston, which is a car service which begins at the point of service on your iPhone or your Android. You download an app and then allow the service to know where you are, and they can show you on the map cars coming to you and what time they will arrive. They use a system, a GPS system, to figure out the distance from the car to you and wherever you're going, and also figure out how much your trip is going to cost based on the same methodology. So this is very different from what is the case in regular taxis or car services. And the fact of the difference, the GPS, is at issue for Uber in many cities.
Okay, Kelly, if I may, let me just clarify what you just said there.
Okay.
It's when you think about it, it's not that different from a traditional taxi or even a car service. When you book a car, you call someone on the phone and you say where you're going, and they look up on Google Maps and say, okay, how far is that and how long do you want the car? And thanks to technology now, where we can sample GPS points every 5 seconds, we can calculate that very, very accurately. So there's never any uncertainty regarding how far you're going and how long you're going to take to get there, because you're charged specifically for what you use. And so the technology isn't that different from what happens today. It's just happens on our back-end servers. And at the end, you see the fare. And if you're, you know, if there's any concerns or questions, we're always available to help out. And we want to make sure everyone understands how the pricing works.
Well, and I should mention that in a few cities where there's been some controversy, persons who had used the service then petitioned their government representatives to say, hey, it worked well for me. I like it. Wait a minute. Let's think about it. So a couple other questions. I thought it was mostly a kind of car service, meaning limo, sedan situation, not taxi. But you do have taxi service, or you did introduce it here in Boston beginning in October of last year. But it's a little bit confusing to understand that on your website and looking at the app. But taxi service might be of interest to me. So that's what I tested out this afternoon. Let me say, not to good effect. So I think there's some confusion there that can be cleared up by language that is not currently on your website.
I would say that's a fair point. I'm also excited to really talk about another, you know, there's really two big monumental steps for Uber this week. One is what happened in D.C. with the model legislation, and second is what we call Uber 2.0. Some folks have said that Uber in the past, it's a utility, but it's not beautiful. And now we have an app that we've put out to the public this week. And we're trialing it right now with a few users, but we'll roll out more broadly later this month. And it's as beautiful as the car is, the app is, and then also there's a much improved experience for first-time users. I mean, we understand that we owe it to clients to help them understand what this weird Uber thing is. Usually you hear about it from a friend, you might hear about it from the news, and you open it and you might not know what you're in for. And so this new app really lays it out for you much more clearly, and we're very, very excited. And hopefully that will clear up any questions you might have around the taxi or the black car services.
Well, that would be helpful. The other thing is, I get very irritated if it doesn't all come together through your own instructions right away. So two people had to work on it with me, and because I'm done now. You know, I would never do it again if I hadn't had two folks in there trying to work with me about it. And you left out, when you say go to general and click on location services, it does not say go to privacy. So I'm like, where's location services? I don't see it. Just letting you know, that was one irritation. Then after we get it all in and I press the button and the cab's coming and it tells me, and I'm watching it and it says 5 minutes away, and then it gives me the picture of the guy. Then he cancels. Okay. So I'm like, okay, is it something I said? So then I try it again. Then he cancels again. So I was standing in the front waiting for it, but I realized then, here's something I don't know that you don't say. What does a cab look like? I got the information from one of your public relations persons who explained that you partner with licensed taxis. So it could look like another taxi company. And in fact, I think I saw him, but didn't realize that's what it was. So that didn't help me at all. And I really wanted my salted caramel at Starbucks this morning. I was all ready for it, Michael Powell.
So first of all, let me say, nothing saddens me more than when someone has a poor first-time experience with Uber. And I promise you, it's a guarantee that you'll be hearing from us, most likely when I step out of this radio booth right here.
Okay.
But on your second point, in terms of identifying and understanding, we get this question quite a bit. How to know that I'm in an Uber? And on the taxi front specifically, we offer a few pieces of information. One is we offer the cab number. We offer the driver photo and name. And then we offer things in the car. So, for example, we tell users or riders to look for the iPhone that's sitting right in the front panel.
Okay, because I got his name and picture, and it said 4.9 stars, but I'm thinking, is that on the cab? I don't know. But it turns out it's his rating.
Sure.
But I didn't know that, you know?
And it's it's great feedback. You know, with taxis, there's a lot of taxis out there.
Yeah.
Right? And we understand that it can be confusing. And so we're constantly working on improving the experience. And, you know, if the number's not enough, the name's not enough, you know, we've talked about adding flashing yellow lights to your app that go off when the car is close, right? There's features that we've talked about. And hopefully we'll get in the app to make the experience even more seamless.
Okay, because if you walk out of your building and there's three cabs there, I wouldn't necessarily know which one is mine. So if it's coming from Uber, so that's just the feedback there. So that was kind of disappointing. Something that was good news for you is that because we are in a state where the governor really promotes innovation. It was Governor Patrick who and his the folks that work with him who said, wait a minute, if we say we're a state that promotes innovation, and my colleague Karen Miller just got done talking about a survey of states and their efforts to be more innovative overall, then we have to allow or make room for an Uber Boston or services like this, services that take an old model and put an innovative twist on it. I imagine you're very happy about that response.
Absolutely, right. There's really two core tenets, or actually three core tenets at Uber. We're pro-consumer, we're pro-driver, and we're pro-innovation. And those tenets are, when you shine a very bright light on them, they're very hard to argue with, right? So let's take the Commonwealth and the governor who really, really stepped up during the cease and desist process in August. And at the end of the day, he had folks in his office who use Uber, and they understand. Clients, they're able to get more, except for you, Callie, and I apologize. And we'll fix that.
Thank you.
More reliable, efficient, safe, transparent transportation in their city, no matter when and why they want it. And for the drivers, they're able to log on in their free time and make money, put more food on their family or food on the table for their family, as well as invest in their business. And at the end of the day, it is an innovative, potentially disruptive type of technology. But that's what many city governments want to attract, mm-hmm. want to promote. And so once they do engage in that conversation with us and we talk to them, things usually, we hope we can have more conversations and more processes like what happened in D.C. this week.
All right. So where are you with the Cambridge scenario? Because I'm not quite clear. It's a little confusing to me about Cambridge is suing to overturn the state's ruling. That involves Uber. Can you explain to me where that is?
Sure, mm-hmm. sure. I can comment a little bit broadly. Mm-hmm. I'd say with the pending litigation, it's tough to provide a concrete update, mm-hmm. right, and details. But I can say that we've been working closely with the Cambridge City Councils to better understand their concerns with technology such as Uber. That is in process, and it does take time. But we're firmly committed to making sure we can continue to operate for the citizens of Cambridge so they can have reliable, pro-consumer, innovative transportation.
All right. That's Michael Powell. He's the general manager of Uber Boston. It's an innovative car service, transportation service, offering taxi, limo, and sedan service right here in the Boston area. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
Kara Miller's back in Studio 3.
Hey, Kelly, so if you think about your TV set, the one you own today, and you contrast it with the one that you had growing up, how much has it changed in terms of where is it and how does it look?
Well, it totally looks different.
Does it, yeah?
Because it's flat screen and it's not, a heavy tube thing.
Right.
But the tube thing lasted forever and ever and ever. The flat screen, not so much.
Yeah, and is it still in your living room?
Oh, no, I have them everywhere.
Okay,
oh, I'm in TV, too.
So coming up, we're going to be thinking outside the box with a look at television, why the TV set as a box itself hasn't changed too much, and what companies are doing to really rethink and redesign the TV. I'm Kara Miller.
I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. Intelligent, but not yet equivalent.